Please go ahead. This afternoon's conference call is now being recorded.
Thank you very much, Tim. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all. Welcome to today's FICHUI's implementation meeting with the IRT. On today's call, we have Alan Greenberg, Alex Deacon, Edward Lewis, Jonathan Dennison, Joyce, Mark Anderson, Mike O'Connor, Roger Carney, Sarah Bocchi, Theo Goertz, Patrick Kane. From staff, we have Fabien Bétrémieux, Barry Cobb, Christa Papak, Marika Konings, Mike Zupka, Steve Tan. We also just have Jennifer Gore-Stand, who has joined us in the Adobe Connect room. I hope I haven't left anyone off the attendance. And if I could also please remind everyone to state their name when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you, and over to you, Fabien.
Thank you very much, Gisela.
Thanks.
Hi, everyone. This is Fabien Bétrémieux. I will very quickly introduce myself as we have, I think, new members of the IRT. We'll come back to that in the presentation as part of our call for expert volunteers. So I'm the project manager for the FICHUI's implementation project. I'm a member of the registry services team in GDD at ICANN, and I'm supported by a cross-functional team from ICANN staff with representatives from the policy team, the registrar services team, the technical services team, as well as our compliance and legal departments, and many of whom are on the call today. The objective of this call is to share with you the status of the work of the implementation planning, as well as providing you an opportunity to discuss. Our agenda, all right, so our agenda is the following. We'll very quickly go through the current status of the implementation, then we'll get into the substance of what we have called the consistent labeling and displays trend of work, and then we'll address the transition from thin to thick quiz trend of work, and finally we'll talk about our next meeting. So in terms of timing, this is a rough guide of the amount of time we should spend on each part, and that should only guide us, and we'll adapt to the discussion that happens in this call. So let's start with the current status of implementation. Here, we just want to share with you where we were at during our last meeting, which was on the 16th of October, during the ICANN meeting in Los Angeles. So the four main conclusions were that we agreed to move on and by decoupling the implementation of the two expected outcomes of the policy recommendation. That is, on one side, ensuring consistent labeling and display for all GTLDs per specification 3 of the 2013 RAA. That's on one side. And on the other side, the transition from thin-to-thick-quiz for the TLDs that are concerned by this, which is .com.net.js. Our second conclusion was that we were going to work on a detailed impact assessment for consistent labeling and display of who is output. On the transition from thin to thick quiz, that's our third conclusion, we agreed to work into inviting experts from affected parties to assist us in working out the implementation details of that transition. And we also discussed the legal review and include our expectation of receiving the conclusions into our plan. So in terms of actual plan and timeline, here is the timeline we discussed in our meeting. With, as you can see, those two gray boxes representing our two strands of work that we're conducting in parallel. I'm not going to go back into the details, but this is just to show you where we're, what's our current assumptions for the timeline of this implementation project. And as we progress through our work, we will constantly refine our assumptions and this planning. So I believe this was it for this first section. Are there any questions or comments at this stage? Please use the raise your hand feature in the Adobe Connect if you want to speak at any time. I don't see anybody raising their hands, so I will move on to our next item on the agenda, which is the status and discussion on the consistent and labeling consistent labeling and display of who is output for all GTLDs. So a bit of background here on the impact assessment that we've agreed upon during our last meeting. This is coming from the policy recommendation number one, which provided that the provision of FITQUIS services with a consistent labeling and display as per the model outlined in specification 3 of the 2013 RAA should become a requirement for all GTLD registries, both existing and future. So this is based on this recommendation that we conducted the draft assessment, impact assessment that we shared with you, with a view to, first of all, identify who were the potentially affected parties, analyze the nature and the scale of work that was going to require in these parties, and eventually prepare the development of the implementation plan, as well as provide you as members of the IRT an opportunity for discussing these potential impacts and what that means for the implementation. So hopefully you've had a chance to review those documents. If you haven't, we have here on this slide the main conclusions. So this is a very high-level summary of our analysis. So I would recommend, if you didn't get a chance to review the documents yet, to take the time to maybe at least read the Word or PDF document, which I think is only a few pages long. But so just to give you this high-level summary, we have five main conclusions. The first one is that all peak GTLD registries, so new GTLDs and pre-2012 GTLDs, will have to collect and add new registrar data to their output, and that's in particular the reseller information and IDs contact. And that's a fairly high impact because that will require a potential change to the EPP interfaces. The second fairly high impact we've identified is that for most GTLD registries, FIC registry, GTLD registries already existing and in legacy pre-2012, those will need to add also new registrant data to their output, and that's some contact information as well as the DNS segregation status. And indirectly, because of the impact on these registries, registrars that are distributing names for these registries, whether they're IRA 2009 or 2013, they will need to provide this new data to registries. And so that, again, impacts the registrar, although we'll see in the next slide that we have an open question to understand whether the registrars are subject to the policy or not. Directly, I mean, in the sense that they also would need to move, especially for the registrars under RA 2009, move to the Step 3 of the 2013 RA for their who's out there. So our last two main conclusions, we've also identified some kind of a lower intensity impact that most contracted parties that are affected by these aspects of the policy will need to adjust the ordering and how they name some of the fields. but these are lower impact because they may not require as complicated software development as the other impacts would. And finally, we've also looked at third parties that use the WHOIS outputs on a regular basis and who may need to adapt whatever tools or processes they use to complete this. I see that Mark has raised his hand. Do you want to go ahead, Mark?
Yes, thank you. This is Mark Anderson. I do want to jump in at this point on this point because it's saying, you know, as you pointed out in your assessment, this is a high impact item, and I know there are a number of people from the I think it was working group that can maybe jump in on this, but I think this is really an unintended impact from the WHOIS working group. I don't want to speak for everybody else, but we intended to have a consistent WHOIS output, but not necessarily exactly the same. And adding the registrar of use contact information and reseller information is very impactful to, I think, all registries and registrars. And it costs, we're talking real dollar amounts, cost associated with implementing this. So I'd really like to delve into this a little bit more because I think this is unnecessary and really not what we intended from the WHOIS working group.
Thank you, Mark. I think I saw two other hands being raised. One was Howard and one was Mikey. Howard, did you want to speak to this? Okay, so then, Mikey, you want to go ahead?
Thanks, Fabian. I bet Howard did what I almost did and hung up. I came dangerously close to that. This is Mike O'Connor. I've changed my name back to Mike just to keep you on your toes. Let me chime in behind Mark on this. I think that's exactly right. The goal of the WHOIS working group was primarily driven by the need that came out of the IRTP C, I believe, where what we were really trying to get to is the ability of a gaining registrar to learn details about from the prior registrar or the current registrar, depending on what term you use, about the registrant. And so I'm going to defer to others like Mark who understand the impact better, but I think in terms of the policy goal, it's not necessarily going to advance the policy goal to add those other fields. And so I would cheerfully sort of go along with a conclusion that said consistent but not identical. I think the main goal is to get to the ability for registrars to exchange information in thin WHOIS circumstances while the transition to thick is taking place. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for your contribution and for keeping me on my toes. I am on my toes, I can confirm. So I saw Joe raising his hand and Alan as well. Do you want to go ahead, Joe?
Yeah, thanks, Fabian. So I would just add to the points that Mike and Mark made that I think that the GNSO is already undertaking a complete review of all of the recommendations from the WHOIS expert working group recommendations, and I think that there are a number of new contact types. So I think that this is appropriate to take, those contact types for reseller information and abuse contact, and allow that to work through the GNSO process as it relates to the EWG work that's going on. And we're we are, as Mark said, still in alignment with ensuring that the FICWHOIS responses that the registries give are consistent, but not necessarily identical. So I just wanted to kind of toss that out as I think that work being done within the GNSO is an appropriate way for that to be addressed.
Thank you, Joe. Alan, do you want to go ahead?
Yes, thank you very much. It's Alan speaking. Actually, I had originally just put a tick mark up agreeing with Mikey, but I'll put a few words in. I very much agree with Mikey that with Mike, sorry. It's going to take a while to change back. That we need to remember why this PDP was done and what the recommendations were. There are so many other things going on in with regard to who is or whatever it becomes, some of which we know about now, and this is an example, some of which will be coming up. It's going to be very tempting to try to incorporate other things into our plan, and I think we need to be very careful to restrict the ancillary things we do to those that are really necessary to accomplish the original FICWHOIS goal, and not put other things in which might be nice to do at the same time. There's certainly a synergy in doing things at the same time, but if we're not careful, it becomes a monster which is never going to be completed. It already probably has the longest implementation time of any PDP other than the new GTLD one, and I think we need to be careful about it not growing even more complex. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Mike, you want to go ahead?
I just want to add to what Alan said. I think one of the things that I've been reflecting on in these IRTs is the temptation to add policy or add things to a policy that's being implemented. And I'm going to take a fairly conservative view as just sort of a general stance that says, let's, just to amplify Alan's point, let's be really careful about adding things during implementation of policy. So just to amplify that, thanks.
So thank you all for your comments. I think as an immediate reaction, what I want to share with you is that we absolutely didn't have any intention to add policy to policy. I think the assessment is the exact opportunity we're looking for to discuss this with you. Our reading of the recommendation may have been too strict in this sense, if I hear what you all are saying. So, again, we are hearing you, we will continue working on this. Mike, do you want to speak again?
This is Mike. Yeah, Mark kicked it off right. I don't think that we in the working group were aware of the consequences of what we were writing at that time. So, I just want to lift some of the burden off your shoulders. I don't think it's a matter of perhaps being too strict in your reading. I think it's more a matter perhaps of our policy not being completely aware of some of the consequences of what we were saying, and so we're trying to sort of mitigate that in this conversation.
Okay, excellent. That makes a lot of sense. Thanks, Mike. So let me move on if there aren't any other comments. Anybody else? Okay, so let's move on to the next slide, which is maybe before this, let's jump to the next steps. This is, I'll come back to the open questions, but this is just to tell you that we intend to revise this impact assessment as needed to get to a final version of it, hopefully in January, no later than January, so then we can move on into drafting an implementation plan, which would mean, starting to write the consensus policy requirements, look into the schedule as well as whatever measures we should implement to support this implementation by the affected parties. So this is just to give you an idea of sort of the timeline. Hopefully, we'd have a some draft of the of all or part of the implementation plan by ICANN 52, and hopefully we'd get through a cycle of conversation, discussion, and revision until we have a final version of the implementation plan by April, May for announcement in June, July for an effective date 6 months later. If there are any comments on those next steps and the timeline, let me come back to open question. I see that, Alex, you've raised your hand. Go ahead. Alex, are you muted maybe, or do you want to go ahead? Okay, well, Alex, please interrupt if you want to jump in on this. So let me just quickly go back to some of the open questions we had from doing this assessment work. The first question that occurred to us is, should the thin GTLD registry, so .com.net.job, be involved in the consistent labeling and display strand of our work at this stage? You know, we are aware that this would mean potentially two pieces of work for these and the parties involved in those TLDs, registries and registrars, but we were wondering whether this could potentially be an implementation step which could somehow help what would eventually come, which is the transition from synthetic. So that's our first question then. And we had actually three questions, but I made two groups because the other two questions are related to whether the policy is actually also targeting registrars or not. So I think what the policy makes clear is that it targets registries and the who is output of GTLD registries. But we've seen that, you know, it does impact registrars indirectly, as we mentioned, and we were wondering whether we should be concerned with a direct impact to the registrars, because then there would be impacts on the specific registrars that are under the IRA 2009 for legacy TLDs, as well as potentially registrars of the thin GTLDs I just mentioned. So does anybody want to discuss one of these topics? Mike, please go ahead.
I think I'm going to discuss all three of these at the same time and basically go back to what I said in the last section, which is that the main goal, at least when we were writing the policy, was to allow registrars to look at the registrant during transfers. And so following that thread, then in a thick registry, the registrars can already do that. It's the thin registries that they can't. So to answer number one, I think the answer is probably not, because thin registries don't get the information that's needed. That information only resides at registrars. So then that says to the answer to number two, yes, I think they are, or should be, because that's the goal of the policy, is to allow registrars in thin registries, you know, when dealing in transfers in thin registries, to see who the prior registrant is so that they can determine change of registrant. So I think yes. So number one is no, number two is yes. And thin GTLD registrars I think the numbers 1 and 2, or 1 and 2 of the second group are both yes, at least in my memory of the policy making.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mike. Roger, did you want to speak to this? Roger, I saw a hand raised. Did you cancel it, maybe? In any event, does anybody else want to contribute to this discussion, react to what Mike was saying? Mark, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Mark Anderson. I agree with what Mike said. With the first one, we want to avoid duplication of work, right? So I think the right answer here is to combine the CL&D work as part of the transition from thin to thick. That cuts down on the churn and allows the consolidation of efforts. So I think that certainly makes sense. I must confess on the first one, I'm not all that familiar with the ramifications between the 2000 registrars on the 2009 RAA and the subsequent 2013 RAA. So that might be a better question for registrars. I know we have some on the working group here. We want to minimize the impact here, and to the second the second point on registrars, I think it they have a transition from some thin to thick as well, so I think it would make sense to combine those efforts when possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Alan, did you want to jump in?
Yes, thank you. Two administrative things. I don't know if someone on staff is accepting hands when they go up. Please stop doing that. The hands disappear, the speaking order disappears, and it gets very confusing.
Alan, just to respond to your administrative point, this is me that's doing that and I'm actually trying to understand why the hands are not staying there. Sorry.
Yeah.
No, I'm learning.
It's related to Adobe Connect, and if you're speaking on Adobe, it turns on your microphone. But ignore those little boxes. It's also somewhat confusing to have a slide with two ones on it. However, onto the open subject, I guess the question I would do is phrase the questions in reverse. What is the impact of having them not subject to this? And is that something we can live with from the point of view of this policy or not? If the rule says they need to be subject to something, and they may be in violation of something as a transition part, in the midst of the transition, then maybe it's acceptable. Other than that, I don't think we want to be in the business of altering policies. And altering parts of the contracts.
Okay, thank you, Alan. I think you're raising a great question, and also yes, I'm also the culprit for having two ones on the side, and I apologize. Mike, did you want to jump in?
Oh, yeah, this is Mike. I'm changing my mind on my answer to the second number one, the middle one on the page, and that is, I finally, the coin dropped here. For pre-2012 thick GTLDs, I don't think that we, from the policy standpoint, care, because remember, our goal is to allow a registrar to find the registrant, the current registrant. Well, in a thick registry, they can do that already. They can go to the registry for it. They don't need to maintain that data themselves. And so, as a result, I think number one in keeping with everybody else's point that, you know, let's make the work as light as possible, I don't think that registrars need to do work on that one. The one that's important is the number two, which is then a question of timing. And it maybe gets a little bit ambivalent. I think that the policy goal was to make registrant data visible in thin registries. And, you know, it may be that there's a judgment call here depending on what the timing of the transition is. If the timing is going to be about the same for CL and D as it is for the transition to thic, it may not be worth the work. If, on the other hand, the timing of CL and D could be a lot sooner and registrars could start identifying prior registrants sooner, that would be a good thing. But I think that's the one that needs to be thought through as the planning actually gets done.
Thank you, Mike. And I think that's a great point in terms of the timing. What we're trying with the decoupling, what we're trying to do is that, you know, potentially bring some outcome, you know, achieve some of the outcome of the policy until we can achieve the entire policy, knowing that the transition from thin to thick is complex to design and is also and will be long to most likely fairly long to implement. Jennifer, do you want to speak to this?
Yes. First of all, I want to say this is my first time joining the working group, so I apologize if this question has been asked previously. I represent Registrar.com and Network Solutions as far as retail registrars. My question related to the number two on the document is, has the working group determined how many registrars remain on the 2009 RAA to understand whether or not this is an edge case, or what's the population of registrars that would be affected by forcing registrars to adhere to the recommendations of the BitCoup's policy working group?
Thank you, Jennifer. So I think we have Howard on board. Please, Howard, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it's in the range of 300. Am I correct? I think that's the type of numbers we had. I'm sorry, I don't have that right under my eyes right now. But we could, in any case, come back to your question. But I think that's about the scale of what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah.
My follow-up question to that, Howard, would be, out of the 300 remaining, how many are active registrars, and what are the expiration dates forthcoming on those contracts? Because I do realize many of them are coming due for expiration.
Yes, actually, a lot of them will be renewed next year, within this year, next year. There will be most of them will be renewal, but there will be some extreme that will go to 2016. Yeah, and also when we say active, let's say they're all active, but how many names they're managing? It's not a lot. Yeah, most of the names are right now under the management of 2013 RAs. Like above 90%, like 90% of names that are managed by the 2013 RAs.
So the assumption would be that X percent by the end of 2015 would still remain on the 2009, but, you know, that percentage would be far less than 300 by the time.
I would say so, yeah.
These policies would be implemented.
It depends on our timeline, yeah. If for the current timeline, it's about that, yeah.
That's all I have.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you. I saw that. Joe had raised his hand. Did you just put it down, or was that an error?
No, I put it back down. I was just going to suggest that we move on. I want to make sure we get to the legal review.
Thanks for this reminder. We do want to get there, absolutely. Thank you. Alan, do you want to go ahead? Maybe that will be the last intervention on this topic.
Yeah, yes, thank you, and I'll be very quick. I really think that when we're presented with questions like that, we should have the kind of data we're talking about now in front of us so we can make reasonable decisions and not have to speculate on exactly what the impact is. That's number one. Number two, my recollection is on the new .com contract, there's a provision similar to the one in the new GTLDs that once a certain threshold of domains are managed by 2013 registrars, the others must convert within a year. If I'm correct and I'm remembering it correctly, then that pulls the threshold back in way before 2016. So thank you.
Thank you, Alan. And if we can provide the precision on these numbers right now, in any case, our goal with the impact assessment is to provide that type of information. So please, welcome your comment and don't hesitate to make those comments on the document as well. Thank you. So I see a hand raised for Jennifer. Is that an old hand or a new hand?
Sorry, that's old hand.
Okay, thank you. So let's move on. So we talked about the next steps and the timeline. So we'll work on that. So let's move on now to the transition from scientific quiz. That strand of work. You remember that we reached out to the IRT requesting for your assistance with this call of experts. The intent was to gather relevant experts from affected parties to work with us on the implementation details from the transition from theme to quiz. We did several outreach to the registrar stakeholder group as well as to all the registrars, and so far we've received responses from 12 volunteers representing 10 registrars. They've all received some kind of welcome package with the final report, as well as the recording of our session in Los Angeles to help them with onboarding. And we've added them to the IRT mailing list until we potentially refine the mode of engagement, but most likely, unless somebody or the group just otherwise, they will, be part of the IRT and be welcome to join our meetings. So the list of those volunteers is on our wiki page. And what's on our plate, on our side, in terms of the next steps, is to initiate the discussion on this on substance for, this transition implementation. So we have yet to determine exactly when we're going to start this and with what frequency we'll organize those specific calls. So unless there is any questions or comments on this, I will move on to the legal review. I don't see any hand raised, so I will move on. So the legal review, you may remember from our timeline and our very high-level project plan that the legal review is on the critical path of this strand of our work. And you may remember or will see in the archives of the mailing list that we shared a memo of this on the scope of this legal review that was shared prior to ICANN 51. So there's been a lot of work going on there. And right now we have preliminary conclusions. We were hoping that we could get to a more finalized state, but this is taking more time than we thought, given the challenges of this analysis. I'm sure that you all know probably even better than I do the complexity of this issue. So this is one of the reasons why it's taking more time. And also there is a lot of work, a lot of parallel activities that are relevant to this subject as well, be it the review of the WHO's requirements in national law conflicts procedure or the EWG. And this is, causing that we are only with preliminary conclusions right now. So those preliminary conclusions are based on the review that was done, the initial review that's been done and that is currently still ongoing on the EU laws, as well as some considerations of general data protection issues that may arise with the transition. So those preliminary conclusions are the following. So basically, the main takeaway at this stage is that most likely the implementation of the transition will require a lawful basis for handling of the data in terms of disclosure, transfer, and retention. And one way of achieving this could be through the insertion of new clauses in registration agreements, which would address legitimate use or purpose limitation and require consent from the registrants. And then another mechanism that could be relevant is to use safe harbor provisions, which would automatically waive restrictions or grant approval for transfer of data. And that's, again, coming from the EU framework that we looked at first because of, you may remember from the EWG memo that was shared during the policy work, that, the EU framework was foreseen as being possibly one of the most stringent in terms of data protection. One of the takeaways and one of the reasons why the analysis will take more time is that there may be some laws or potential laws that are being considered in some jurisdictions or specific countries that may require special consideration because they may seek to impose specific obligations with respect to storage or processing of information relating to the borders of a particular country and restrictions around that area. So this is pretty much the preliminary conclusions we can share at this stage. I see Alan hands raised. You want to go ahead, Alan?
Yes, thank you. Unless I'm missing something, most of these considerations are applicable to TLDs that are thick or are going to be starting up as thick in relation to new gTLDs and will have to be addressed in those. What are the specific conditions associated with those in under transition that are different?
Alan, thanks for your question. It is difficult for me to answer these questions. I'm not even necessarily sure I understand it fully. So what I just want to reiterate what we've done with this analysis, and we're really taking we're considering specifically registries that are transitioning. So we're not considering existing thick gTLD registries. We're considering specifically the context of the transition from thin to thick. So I don't know if I understand correctly your question, and you may want to potentially rephrase it, if I may ask.
I will try. Issues like data retention, transfer out of jurisdiction, if that is going to happen with a transition thick registry, then chances are it is also happening with other registries. Now, I understand there may well be some registrars around that only deal with the three registries in question here or a subset of them. That's certainly conceivable. and I understand the impact on them. But for a registrar that has, that handles other GTLDs, would they not have to address these issues, and I can have to address these issues, as we are with the various waivers we're generating right now for certain registrars in certain jurisdictions? And that would be as applicable to the transitioned one as it is to the old ones. I want to make sure that we're not trying to tackle separately here problems that are being addressed in the regular course of events for all the other TLDs.
Thank you, Alan. I think I understand more clearly your point now. And you know, we're definitely very aware of that and conscious of that. We don't want to be considering issues that are not specific to the transition, but what's happening is that we're potentially seeing things that may have impacts, you know, beyond TQL. So that's a concern. That's part of the complexity of the analysis. And so I will make sure that I report your point to our legal department. Thanks again, Alan. Amer, do you want to go ahead?
Yeah, thanks, Fabian. This is Amer. I'm not completely sure about how it would work if some of these legal issues were addressed using consent obtained from the registrants. If it was as simple as that, I'm not sure how or why certain waivers to, for example, data retention might be necessary in order for registrars to conform with national laws. And I was wondering, going back to the last slide of the need for experts, I was wondering why there isn't an outreach being done now or a call for experts to people who are actually experts on the issues of data protection and privacy, for example, within the EU, such as, for example, data protection and privacy commissioners in different EU states. I ask this because, well, we went through a pretty exhaustive process in trying to answer these questions throughout the PDP, and we found ourselves to not be able to or to lack the capacity to answer these questions even after public comment. So this is not just in relation to the PDP working group members, but also the rest of the community, including any experts that might have been added, for example, from registrars. So in order to get definitive answers to these questions, I'm just wondering why there hasn't been outreach to experts in these fields. Thanks.
Thank you, Amer. This is, you know, this is handled by the legal team. They've they're talking to, experts. And so I believe that, so I can't really answer your questions. And I see that Krista is raising her hand. Do you want to go ahead, Krista, maybe?
Sure. Thanks, Fabian. This is Krista Papik from ICANN staff. So thanks for the questions, Amer. To your first question about based on consent obtained from registrants, and actually, if I can just put a disclaimer that I'm not a lawyer, which I think most of you probably know that. But that being said, I think, again, these are preliminary conclusions, and what we're trying to communicate here is that transition from thin to thick in a, requires a lawful basis, et cetera, can be established in one or more of the following ways. So I don't think that that particular bullet point is meant to be exhaustive or all-inclusive. And I think that, we've come up with our work so far, the legal department's work so far has produced at least these three potential avenues, and we're saying there's potentially even more than that. So that's to the first part of the question. As far as the second part, and I think Fabian actually answered it, as far as reaching out to experts, our legal department is heading up this effort for obvious reasons, because it's a legal review And they are reaching out to experts and you know, using other resources rather than, you know, other resources beyond just the internal legal department at ICANN.
Thank you, Krista. Amar, do you want to respond?
Yeah, thanks, Krista, and thanks, Fabian. This is Amar again. Would it be too much trouble to try to learn more about the details of the correspondence between ICANN Legal and the experts that you mentioned? It would have been helpful to at least have a bullet here pointing out that there were experts also recruited or sought out to answer some of these questions. But I'm glad that this has been done. And I'm also wondering, going back to Alan's question on the difference between existing fake registries and those that are under transition now, would something like consent obtained from the registrants make a difference in terms of registrants register a domain name using an already existing fake whois registry? Are registrants actually giving this consent beforehand, as opposed to those under transition where this consent needs to be actively obtained before the transition can take place? Thanks.
So, Amar, what I suggest I do is that I take back your questions to our legal department and we get you an answer. I want to take the opportunity of your mentioning, you know, some details of all this. I've been working hard with our legal department to provide to share a document with you. So let me talk to them and see if there is anything we can add to the document that has been prepared and that we are going to be sharing with you after this meeting. And please excuse me if I'm not able to answer directly your question, but I will take it back. Joe, do you want to go ahead?
That was great.
Thank you, Amar.
Yeah, thanks.
Joe, do you want to go ahead?
Thanks. I'm going to echo Krista's disclaimer that I'm also not a lawyer, but I also want to extend an appreciation for the registrars that have joined the group, because I think that was important for this exact reason. The part of what we had heard in a lot of the discussions, I think going back to at least through the PDP working group from registrars in our discussions, was that there are differences in the registration agreements. And while registrars that have registration agreements for the new TLDs or have been TLDs that have been thick from the beginning, the terms for each of the TLDs that they register, they're often a base agreement and then call-outs for unique components for each different TLD. So I think this is really a case for you know, registrars to look at registration agreements that they've got with their registrants and ensure that you know, that these issues are addressed. Some registrars have said that their local laws will allow them to just make an update and then it takes effect after a certain amount of time. Others need to get explicit consent from each registrant. So I think this is really a complex issue that really is going to vary based on each registrar and the jurisdictions where those registrars operate. So that's why I think that this is an important issue, and I do think that you know, the results of the legal analysis are important, but also the engagement from the you know, the registrars who are going to definitely be impacted by this.
Thank you, Joe, and I want to take you know, advantage of what you're saying to just very quickly say before we get to Jennifer's comments or questions, that we would like to get your feedback and any questions you may have or topics you think these analyses should not miss or should consider, because we want to include this to the discussions with those experts that we're relying on for this work. So with that, Jennifer, do you want to go ahead?
Thank you, and thanks, Joe, for your comments, and I think it's important that registrars do chime in on this particular issue. The one piece that I want to just comment on is around the act of consent. if that is a has been deemed as to be a viable option within some jurisdictions. As a registrar, I have some concerns around that, and the reason being is registrars are now responsible to get active consent around domain verification, and there we're experiencing some issues around that. So I'd like to just make sure that if we do hone in on an active consent as an option, to understand the attributes associated to it. Is active consent based upon where the registrant is located, where the registrar, terms and service, applicable law, under what state, what country? There's a lot of things for consideration there. So I just want to make sure if we're heading down that path, that we thoroughly think through what the process is and the definitions of it.
Thank you, Jennifer, and I can confirm that this is exactly the intent. We want to look at all these consequences and all of these complexities, and that's why it's taking more time than we thought it would. And I will make sure that your exact comments is carried to the legal departments to make sure that, so that my confirmation is confirmed by the legal departments, for sure. Thank you about that. Is there any other questions? I see that we're running out of time. I just want to very quickly come again to these next steps for the legal review. We're going to target to complete the analysis by ICANN52, during which we are going to meet. Again, please share with us any other comments or questions or suggestions you have for us to integrate into our discussions with those experts who are working with. Just a quick comment on the impact of this delay on our timeline. So you can see here that I've adjusted where the legal review falls into the timeline and the impact that that's going to have on the discussion with the experts for the design of the implementation plan. What we're going to try to do, and that's what we're going to be working on with the project team, is to suggest ways to start engaging with experts on these issues we're seeing from the legal analysis and start identifying potential solutions in the face of those issues we're finding. Next RT meetings. So our next meeting is planned for 18 December at 15 UTC, same time as today. Here is a few agenda points that we would discuss, and we propose that the following meetings happen on 15 January and 12 February during the ICANN52. If there are any comments, I see a hand from Jennifer. Is that an old hand?
Sorry, yes.
Okay. So with that, we're at the top of the hour. Unless there are any other questions or comments, I would like to extend our appreciation for your time today and for your engagement with us. And we're looking forward to continuing the work with you in preparation for our next meeting in 2 weeks. Thank you very much.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Fabian.
Thank you.
Thank you.